is it really interesting to see how these companies are approaching Chicago, right?
She was telling me she's getting acquainted with the companies, really trying to understand how the tech ecosystem here works.
And this was kind of the big social media story in the news. Twitter said that it is based on the behavior of an account. So if an account looks particular...
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And welcome to Monday afternoon, everyone. It is 12:12 here from the Allstate Skyline Studio on this hot summer day. Everyone's back in school, and it's too bad because it's cooking out there today. Heat advisory throughout the afternoon. Speaking of hot, Jim Dulkey and Catherine Davis are in the studio, as they are most Mondays, to talk about, it just came out. I apologize to both of you.
What a transition. I love it.
It was the wrong thing to say, wrong thing to do. I didn't mean it. A little bit later, Philip Weiss will be here. He, of course, is from WorkRight Solutions, and he's going to talk about whether or not offices have, like, Amoroso policies. So, you know, if a worker records other workers or bosses or things like that. Have you guys ever recorded each other in your Chicago offices?
Well, that's a no-go in Illinois because you have to have consent to record. I know it's a different state by state, obviously. I'm not sure how it is in D.C. But I know in Illinois you got to be letting someone know that you're recording.
If you're recording them?
Yeah,
I should know that being in radio. But we always just tell everyone. I didn't know that. Catherine, have you been worried that you've been eavesdropped on?
I don't think so.
No?
Not yet.
Well, Philip will talk about the pitfalls of it because actually his advice is not to ban recording. I think if you issue a blanket sort of policy, it could be bad. But he's the guy who advises businesses about that. So we'll kick that around a little bit later. Chicago Inno is here on most Mondays to talk about what's latest in the world of tech. And tell me about Jason Kolb and Deis, right? For some reason or not, it seems like we talk a lot about insurance and insurance companies on this program.
Yeah, you know, Chicago is kind of becoming this interesting startup hub for insurance companies, also Milwaukee and Madison as well. So we are kind of this general region is seeing a lot of innovation around insurance. And what Deis is doing, it's a new startup in Chicago founded by Jason Kolb, the former CTO of Uptake. Actually, he was Uptake's founding CTO. And so he has since left the company and kind of been the founder here of a really interesting sort of stealthy under the radar company, raised about $14 million here, really kind of taking an interesting look at insurance companies.
Well, he says that the way they do things really hasn't changed much in 30 years.
Exactly.
So tell me what it is that he wants to do.
So basically what they're doing is building a platform for insurance companies, sort of the way that Salesforce built a sales enablement tool for businesses. Okay. They're doing the same thing for insurance. They're still very much kind of keeping things under wraps and not kind of really unveiling everything that they're doing, but some of the things they're doing are really involving around workplace efficiency. So a lot of the stuff that's done by paper, they're trying to automate that. So we are seeing right now a lot of insurance startups like Lemonade, for example, a very heavily venture-backed, who are really trying to go after the legacy insurance companies. What Deis is trying to do is arm the legacy insurance players with some technology.
So Deis is trying to bring the modern-day weapons to the old-school companies.
Exactly. So using kind of data to quantify risk, using a billing platform to kind of make the whole billing process a little easier and more transparent, and really sort of take those processes that are typically done by hand and by paper and to kind of automate those and to go digital.
Catherine, you wrote a piece about Codeverse, and we've talked to them before, and it's interesting. It's kind of like summer school or camp, right, to teach young kids how to code.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're a Chicago-based startup, and they launched just last year. And yeah, just like you said, they have these, you know, workshops for children ages 6 to 12 to come in and learn coding concepts.
Parents used to make their kids go take Taekwondo or something like that. Now it's going to be coding.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, as our world becomes, you know, increasingly tech-forward, people are going to have these skills. And so Codeverse just raised $10 million last week, and they're going to use that funding to open two new studios, one in Wilmette and one in Naperville.
Where are they now? Are they singularly in Lincoln Park?
Yes, they just have one studio in Lincoln Park that opened last summer.
And they expect to grow pretty big, right? They've got big plans?
Yeah, I mean, their goal, they say, is to teach a billion kids to code.
Well, so those are really big plans.
Pretty lofty goals,
right? I thought I saw number 40 somewhere. Did I see 40 that they wanted to open 40?
Yeah, well, they have 40 full-time employees right now, but they want to hire 60 more people in the next year.
Okay. All right. So right now you've got to go to Lincoln Park if you want your kid to be the next gazillionaire.
Yeah, the next Zuckerberg.
and so are they having success? I mean, they must be if they're raising money. And
yeah, I mean, it definitely sounds like it. You know, they say that their classes are full, that they're constantly hiring new teachers, that, you know, the people that want to get involved. Obviously, they have this new funding. Parents see value in sending their kids to Codeverse.
You know, so again, we talk about advantage, too, that if you can afford to, what is it, $175 a month or something like that, $225 to send your kids to this, that's great. There are a lot of kids in areas of this city that can't afford that.
Yeah.
Is Codeverse doing anything about that?
Yeah, they sort of recognize that, you know, that not everyone can afford this. So what they told me is that they're working with local charities and nonprofits that can help kind of supplement those costs for families that ordinarily wouldn't be able to afford this. So.
All right. Let's do another insurance one. AmFam, American Family, a Wisconsin-based insurance company, right?
Yeah.
But they're doing what ShiftGig does here, or they're competing with ShiftGig, or explain that for me.
Yeah, so American Family Insurance, they're based in Madison, Wisconsin, and they've launched a tech-forward subsidiary here in Chicago called Moonrise. And basically what they've made is an on-demand jobs platform. So a lot like ShiftGig in the way that they're matching people with, you know, shifts that they could take
at
different companies.
Catherine, and we're running out, I don't mean to interrupt, but I did. But so when I was first reading about ShiftGig, I thought this was helping people who couldn't find a job and in between. But really reading your story and thinking about it more, this is more about a lifestyle thing.
Yeah. Moonrise says like their target employee is someone who has a full-time job and just, you know, still isn't making ends meet and maybe needs to pick up an extra shift after work or on a Saturday or Sunday.
Or maybe people who just don't ever want to have a full-time job. Is that part of it too?
Yeah. I mean, if you want to have the flexibility to travel or to spend more time at home with your family and just sort of make some money on the side whenever you're free and available, we're kind of seeing this quote-unquote gig economy pop up, right? That ShiftGig and Moonrise and a lot of other, the Ubers and Lyfts and everyone else is kind of capitalizing on.
That's Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis here from Chicago. You know, like when Chicago Fire and Chicago Med have an episode where the actors commingle,
mm-hmm,
right?
Yeah.
We're going to have that in the next segment because you guys had your coolest company party last week, and one of the winners is a frequent guest on this show. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WG. And it's 12:22 on this Monday afternoon. Jim Dahlke and Catherine Davis from Chicago Inno are in the studio. You also hear the Inno Minute every day on the opening bell at 5:25.
That's right.
You were holding fingers up, but I did it on my own this time. I want to talk about the awards you guys had last week. But first, quickly, Catherine, you wrote about Google and their $1 million economic impact challenge, which is another sign that they are fully engaged in this community. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so Google's philanthropic arm, Google.org, launched this competition. They announced it last week, and they're inviting nonprofits throughout Illinois to submit proposals for ideas that they say, you know, can drive economic growth in their local communities. So they will be choosing 10 winners that will get $75,000 grants along with some training from Google to help, you know, move these projects forward. And then ultimately, a winner that will be voted on from the community will get an additional $250,000 grand.
And so the deadline, I think, is September 21st, so people can apply. They'll find out first of the year who the finalists are.
Yep.
All right, tell me about the Chicago Coolest Company, Chicago Inno's 2018 Coolest Companies. The party was last Wednesday.
That's right. Yeah.
How'd it go?
Coolest Companies Fest was last Wednesday. It was great.
Were there like geeks swinging from chandeliers or anything like that?
Not quite chandelier swinging, but no. It was a good time for sure. Basically for 4 years now, we've kind of done this competition. Really, it's all about workplace culture. We kind of define coolest very loosely, right? It can be a company that has ping pong tables. It can be a company that has free beer in the afternoon. But really what we think about in terms of coolest companies is if you love going to work every day, your company is cool. And that's right. Really what this whole sort of fest and awards event is about.
So you guys are here most Mondays. Every Friday, or most Fridays, Tom Gimbel from LaSalle Network stops by. He's the CEO. It's a placement firm, and they won for audience choice winners. Tell me about that.
Exactly. So what we did was we had five audience choice winners and then five sort of superlative winners. And then the audience winners were basically voted on by our readers. And they were the top vote getter for our audience choice winner.
So Tom was able to make every one of his employees vote several times for this. Is that what it was?
We rallied the troops, sure. Yeah.
Good for him. Okay, so what else stands out from these awards?
Yeah, well, Interior Define, they're, you know, an online furniture startup here in Chicago, and they won for best social media, you know. So social media is a great platform for them to advertise on, you know, and kind of give people an idea of what their concept and what their brand is about. And they have nearly 90,000 Instagram followers and almost 70,000 fans on Facebook. So that's a huge following.
Randy Schaefer is going to be here later. She's a digital editor at the Tribune. And one of the stories we're going to talk about is how preteen or early teenage girls are making money on Instagram by posting for companies. They're getting paid maybe $10 or $50 a pop. And when I was reading about Interior Define, that sort of made me think of it. I don't know that they're doing that, but they are basically, it's word of mouth or social media for this company.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a great way to grow, a great way to, you know, let people know what you're all about.
Jellyvision shows up no matter what kind of competition, it seems like.
They have sort of I think the benchmark, the standard for workplace culture. If you've ever met Amanda Lannert, their CEO,
yeah, she's been on a couple times.
She's terrific. Yeah, yeah. She just sort of, I think, from the top down, sort of fosters a great work environment over there. They've got a cool office and really just kind of among the tech companies in town who is just sort of known for having a really terrific workplace culture.
Okay, tell me about one more, this company Arity, because we'll keep with the theme of old school insurance trying to find new school sort of influence.
That's right. Arity is a spin out from Allstate and kind of an interesting approach that they're taking too. I mean, they're trying to sort of take a legacy insurance company and sort of spin out a startup, right? And to kind of create a startup culture. And that's really what they're doing around Arity. So they've got several hundred folks over there, you know, very much backed by a legacy insurance company, but
what does Arity do?
So they are an insurance company. They're working a lot around autonomous vehicles and sort of trying to quantify risk around car insurance.
I got it. Jim Dahlke, Catherine Davis. Read more at ChicagoInno.com and tune into 525 on the opening bell. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
Thank you, Domati. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN. Art, are you worried about your 12-year-old or 13-year-old girl maybe spending too much time on social media? Maybe she's making up some college tuition. We're going to talk to Randy Schaefer later this half hour about how a lot of online companies now are relying on, teenage girls, I should say, rather than selling lemonade or babysitting, they are posting for companies on Instagram and on Snapchat, and they're getting paid for it. So we'll talk to Randy about that a little bit later. Right now in the studio, though, is Philip Weiss, who is the president at WorkRight Solutions. Philip has been stopping by from time to time for years now, and it's always good to see you. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
So, you know, it loses a little sting here if we talk about recording conversations in the workplace, because almost everything I do here, I'm assuming, is recorded just because of the nature of this work. This was prompted by Omarosa, who has recorded John Kelly, right, when she was fired, recording conversations with Donald Trump. How often does this happen in private workplaces?
Well, it's Omarosa really opened our eyes, and odd that we're maybe saying that,
right,
to a growing reality. And that reality is that with this ubiquitous presence of smartphones and other devices, tech devices, recording of conversations in daily life is becoming increasingly common. And the knee-jerk reaction of employees is, if I'm recording a lot of what I see and hear out in the world, why not do that at
right.
work?
Well, you know, and it's only logical, right? How much news coverage is driven now by things that people have recorded with their phones, whether it's audio or video? So why wouldn't you bring that into the workplace?
Right. And this really goes to this question of when you have a First Amendment right, for example, of free speech, out in the world, that doesn't really apply in the workplace, because company policies can say, wait a second, you can't say anything here.
Right, sure.
In the same way, Steve, they also tell us you can't record everything here all the time.
What is the law when it comes to recording? I would imagine it's state by state.
It is state by state, which is a really good insight, because that means if you're being fired across state lines on the phone and recording that conversation, you got to look at both state laws. It's really safest to assume that it may well be illegal to record a conversation with your boss. Why? Well, if you look at Illinois, our law, which has been changed in the last few years and probably will change again, talks about a surreptitious recording. That means
secret.
Hidden, not out in the open, because the boss is not going to say, go ahead, press record, of a private conversation. And while that hasn't been fully defined by every court, you got to assume a one-on-one with your boss, or he or she is going to basically lay down the hammer on your career, that could be covered.
Okay, so you always come in with stories, and there are so many when it comes to this, but tell me about the woman who recorded her conversation with her boss and ended up going up on drug charges.
Yes. So this is a notion you can't always control what's recorded.
Well, you're playing with a wand that you don't know how to
use. That's right. And you got to remember, you're also recording yourself, not just that person at work who you think has it out for you. So a client came to us after the fact for some forward-looking advice and guidance. But what happened in their case, Steve, is there was a woman who was applying for a job. And this is one of the two Omarosa situations, because she recorded both a firing and a hiring. This is more on the interview side. A woman had heard that from a friend who was interviewed that her interview, the friend's interview, was handled poorly.
Mm-hmm.
Her friend was asked questions about her age, her family status, allegedly. So what this woman did, who heard this story, is she said, I'm going to be a step ahead. I'm going to record the whole interview. She had a dictaphone, carefully concealed. That's surreptitious, by the way, under the law. And she just failed to turn off the dictaphone after leaving the interview.
So she went among her daily routines.
Including not just shopping, but shopping for drugs. Vis-a-vis a conversation with her own personal drug dealer.
Okay, so she has the interview in the office. She doesn't turn it off. So then she goes and she buys whatever she buys from the drug dealer.
Legal and illegal.
And then she forwards the whole thing to her audio file. Right.
Doesn't go to a lawyer herself. That might have been smart.
Right.
Instead, just sent it to the lawyer at the company and said, I recorded this interview, and I just want you to know that I'm expecting a job or else. But the lawyer had the smarts to listen to the entire audio file and just forwarded the file
to the police.
Hilarious,
and the police really charged her.
Yeah, and we've got other cases where people don't realize if I'm recording my termination or my performance review, and I say something in that discussion that discloses, for example, information, and then I share the tape with others, the file.
Then you're violating an agreement.
At least a policy.
Okay, wait, tell me one other story, and then we'll get to more substance. But the guy whose brother worked at a spy shop.
Yeah, so this is this concept that it's not just what you record, it's how you outfit yourself with recording devices. So in this case, the individual, it wasn't as though he was about to get fired. It was more that he expected a rough performance evaluation.
Mm-hmm.
And his brother, as you said, worked at one of these local spy shops and was quite enthusiastic about his job.
I could see him having a couple beers one night at a party saying, hey, yeah, check this out.
You know what? Let's give this a try. It's like a police story. I'm going to outfit you with every audio acoustic device I can think of, and because we're going to get a really good recording, no matter what is said. The problem was that this guy was so laden with these recorders that whenever he bent over, Steve, the device in his vest and the device in his pants interfered with one another, and a loud buzzing sound resulted. And he really wasn't thinking, because his employer was a high-tech defense contractor, so there was a security.
So that was a real issue, yeah.
The policy covered it. They actually had to call federal enforcement agencies because they didn't know what he was doing with the information. So
maybe the brother who owned the spy shop did the country a service by getting rid of that guy.
Right. I think they were too stupid to be effective spies, but you never know.
You're right that the National Labor Relations Board is saying now that it's okay to ban recordings altogether, but you don't think that's a good idea.
Well, it's interesting because we're in an employer-friendly administrative sort of sequence of time.
Right.
And therefore, you're going to see rules come out, and this is one guideline that's come out just a couple months ago that says, it looks like it could be okay to ban recordings in the workplace, but the law could change. The reason that wasn't the law before, Steve, is because we do want to encourage employees to record, for example, safety violations, because no one else might. So be cautious. I wouldn't put the kibosh on all recordings without seeking counsel, for example.
We've got 30 seconds. What's wrong with walking into a meeting and putting the phone between the two of you and say, just so you know, because I want to understand what's happening here, I'm recording this?
Well, number one, the policy may still say it's not okay.
Okay.
You will no doubt hear crickets from everybody in the room.
I was going to say, you're not going to get an honest meeting.
That's right.
Are you?
Just be cautious what you say, though, because you could be recorded whether you know it or not.
Philip Weiss is the president of WorkRight Solutions. It's great to talk to you again. Thanks for coming by.
Good to see you.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Start the timer, because here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Hey, how was your commute today? Maybe a little slow, maybe the train station was a little crowded, and that sweaty guy next to you was getting way too up in your space. Consider this. Think of the impact of adding another train stop that could ease the station congestion every day of the week. Well, that's what Sterling Bay is thinking about as they're considering adding a Metra train stop to the Milwaukee West, Milwaukee North, North Central, and UP West line. The stop could be at the old Archer Daniels Midland Wheat Mill located at 1300 West Carroll Avenue in Fulton Market. Okay, now before you start taking up that extra seat on the train, there are a few more decisions that need to be made, but if this new train stop is added, Sterling Bay will be ready to dish out some more cash and help solidify their expansion of the Fulton Market area. And speaking of cash, the Cook County Health and Hospital System is spending more of it, as they've decided to add 5% of spending to their annual budget. Let's break this down. Your first thought might be that, great, that's spending towards patients, but then your wallet speaks up and says, where is that $150 million coming from? Crane's Chicago Business has further details at chicagobusiness.com, so check it out. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Orion Samuelson. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, here on 720 WGN. Randy Schaefer is in the studio. She's a digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune and comes by to talk us about what's what when it comes to the world of social media. Randy, welcome back to the Biz Lunch.
Hey, Steve. Glad I made it.
Yes, that was a close one, though.
I literally ran and I'm still sweating. It's pretty sweaty out today.
That's nice. Well, I'd like to see my guests suffer a little bit. I've been talking this whole half hour or hour, I should say, that you were coming up to talk about this. You know, I think we did a piece early in the summer about how teenagers weren't doing summer jobs. Wisconsin had to change its age requirements for lifeguards because to make it younger so they had a bigger pool because older kids were either taking college classes, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, the traditional summer job isn't quite what it used to be.
Right.
And then here's the story you bring in about how young girls, sometimes preteen girls, are making money by becoming sort of influencers.
Yeah, I found this story absolutely fascinating. Taylor Lorenz wrote it for The Atlantic, and it's about how posting sponsored content, sorry, I still had a breath from running here.
It's okay.
It's the new summer job for teens. They'll charge like $20 for an Instagram post and call it good.
Okay, so, and they're talking about if you have 1,000 followers or more.
Pretty much, exactly.
That's kind of the magic number.
Like micro-influencers,
okay,
yeah.
So I've got over 1,000 followers.
Mm-hmm.
So what do I do? Do I go to, like, the sub shop on the corner and say, hey, I'll post for you if you give me $20?
I don't really think sub shops are what these teens are kind of marketing.
No.
But no, so actually a lot of them will reach out to teens, or teens will reach out to these companies, and they're mostly smaller shops or clothing stores or accessories or, you know, smaller businesses that are also trying to grow.
So they're pretty hyper-local, it seems like.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's paying off for the girls? What kind of cash are they making?
Well, they'll usually
keep saying girls, but it is predominantly girls.
Yeah, it is predominantly women that do this. But yeah, they'll usually make, you know, a few hundred bucks here or there. A lot of them, they'll get their money through PayPal, so they don't have to explain to their parents, like, where this weird money from the internet is coming from.
Right, don't talk to strangers on the internet unless they're paying
unless
you.
Unless they're paying. Yeah, that still sounds kind of sketchy.
But don't there also, I love that there's a quote from one of the girls who said, you know, you're supposed to have a credit card to set this up.
Yeah, yeah. And she ended up using like a prepaid Visa card, like hacking the system, which
she bought $5 and got around it.
It's probably illegal, but very smart.
Okay, so let's talk law. When I was a kid trying to get my first job, I think I had to either get a waiver if I was under 16 or wait till I was 16 until I could be paid. These are independent contractor fees. I guess it's no different than babysitting, right? There's no legal
issue
here. Right,
it's under the table, so I'm not really sure how taxes work on stuff like that. But yeah, I guess it's kind of the same as babysitting, where someone slips you a $20 bill and calls it good.
I guess it is, yeah.
You see the inquisitive look on my face here.
So it falls into the acceptable part of child labor.
Oh, apparently.
Speaking of child labor, there was a study out that said, well, speaking of children, I guess, that more and more teens think they're spending too much time on social media.
Yeah, in this study I sent you from Forbes, it's actually the focus of this story by Bobby Osinki is more about the music industry worrying, but I thought the numbers were really interesting that teens are aware.
So the music industry is doing pretty well now. We hear that it's not, but the fact that if you have Spotify or Pandora and you're not paying for the premium, you're getting the ads.
The revenue's coming in.
So the music industry is getting the money from those advertisers.
Right, right.
But if they don't keep getting new users, or if users are listening to fewer of those ads, they could end up suffering.
Yeah, it plateaus or drops off. And so now these teens, more than half of teens actually said they think they spend too much time on their phones, on the internet, on social media, and they're trying to cut back.
I think I eat too much pizza, but I'm not going to stop.
Oh, I'm not going to stop eating
too much
pizza.
Do you think there's anything here that there really will be an impact on behavior?
You know, that remains to be seen. It kind of, maybe these teens are going to grow up seeing their parents glued to their phones all the time and decide they don't want to be like that, or, you know, maybe like father, like son, they'll see that and it'll just kind of become how they are.
I got to tell you, Randy, I got up yesterday morning and I forgot to charge my phone overnight and it was dead.
I would be dead.
I shook a little bit. I mean, I was like wait,
withdrawal syndrome.
This isn't right. Yeah. And so I brought the charger to the health club and just waited till I could read my text.
You sound like the average American there, Steve.
Yeah, I know. We got to fix that, don't we? Randy Schaefer, digital news editor at the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by.
Of course.